Hi, this is Paul. After the question and answer today, as I was editing the audio version of the question and answer so I could post it for the audio only podcast, there's almost always an audio only podcast version of my shows. And if you don't know that and you want one, check below in the links for the link to get it. I stumbled across a live performance of Jordan Peterson and Heather Hying on trigonometry. Now, of the Heather and Brett pair, I usually prefer Heather. I think she's a very clear thinker and a very winsome spokesperson for her position. And I listened to quite a bit of this, and I heard Jordan and thought, you know, I think he's an even clearer, I think he articulates more clearly than ever the utility of religion for our present moment. And I thought the take that he gave in this little piece was especially clear. And so I wanted to grab it, because if I don't grab these things right away and isolate them, I lose them and I can't find them. So here it is.
And Jordan, do you think the problem comes from the fact that we don't believe in religion anymore? And if you don't believe in religion, I don't know.
Now it's very interesting. The language, don't believe in religion anymore. Again, there's so much back and forth on this question of belief. I talked about it quite a bit in my last video on Jordan and Andrew Klavan, but it's interesting that he phrases it this way.
Who said this thing, you don't believe, people need to believe in something. And as a result, what we've taken is identity politics as a way to belong to a group. Or do you think it's far more complex than that?
Well, there's a New Testament doctrine that you render unto Caesar what is Caesar and unto God what is God's. And I actually think that's a very astute psychological statement. Mm. And now it depends on whether or not you believe that human beings have a religious instinct. And I think broadly that the answer to that is that they do, for a variety of reasons. First of all, religious experience is elicitable by biochemical means. So that's pretty powerful evidence right there. But there are all sorts of religious-like experiences that we all pursue. So we feel awe to beauty. We feel awe to the ideal. We participate in like mass worship of sports prowess. We like to see people hit the target, which is the opposite of sin, which means to miss the target. We get enraptured by a gospel-oriented rock performance in a stadium, and we do that with other people, and it fills us with enthusiasm, which is to be filled with God, because that's what enthusiasm means. We feel awe towards certain actions that people undertake, particularly if they're radically altruistic or radically truthful. We're possessed by the desire to mimic people that we see act out an ideal that we don't understand, etc., etc. And like, I've made a list of about 50 of these things that I'm not going to go through all of them, but so you imagine there's an instinct that orients us towards the ideal, and that would be part of the consequence of us having to emerge from this insufficient biological substructure that Heather was talking about and move towards whatever we could be. We need a vision of what that is. Mm. And I believe that vision is deeply influenced by biological factors, reciprocity, for example, which would emerge again from the phenomena that our social nature, our protracted childhood dependence, etc. It's an emergent property of that. All of that is reflective of religious instinct. So now then you might posit, societies have to organize themselves so that religious instinct is fulfilled without it disrupting other functions, or without other functions being disrupted by it. So the religious system collapses. Well, it doesn't, the need for it doesn't disappear. And so then what happens, as far as I can tell, is it just plummets down the value hierarchy until it hits a point where it can find some satisfaction. So politics becomes religion. And then look out. Because, see, you know, maybe we have some sense of an absolute ideal. We have the need for an absolute ideal. And maybe you make that abstract and you view that as God, and God is distant and ineffable and undefinable and abstract and eternal. He's not local to your country and your place, like like a figure like Stalin or Mao. And maybe if you don't have something to project that ideal onto, something abstracted, let's say, and perhaps even something communal, then it finds, it starts to contaminate other functions. And I believe that, I think this is where the new atheists went so wrong. Eh? Mm. They assumed that if we just dispensed with all that idiotic superstition, we'd all become, you know, avatars of Richard Dawkins-style logic, assuming we had the capability, which we generally don't. And I just don't see that that's true. I don't see any evidence that that's the case. I think what happens is we dispense with the catastrophic superstition of Catholicism and end up swallowing something much more ungainly and horrible.
Mm. Jordan, I want to latch on to that because we've been talking about religion and, you know, how we've turned our back on religion. Don't you think a lot of these crises come from the fact that we don't yet know in the West how to address the issue of death? And you can see the way we dealt with COVID. To me, it seemed like a moral crisis. It seemed like a general panic. We don't know how to address the fact that we're mortal. And as a result of that, we just seem to be scrabbling around for anything, don't we? Including identity politics.
It's interesting that he went there with it. And it's interesting that this comes, of course, in conjunction with COVID. And it's always interested me that, generally speaking, the ceremonies that we perform surrounding death, and I have one to do tomorrow, and so when I finish this, I have to not only finish that little article for Unbelievable, but also work on my this service, helping the family bury a former member of this church who just recently lost her life and left two sons, now teenagers, parentless, because her husband, who I had married a number of years ago, died a couple of years ago. And so now there are two orphans, basically. And what do you do with that? And this is a perennial problem. And again, I think Peterson's getting better at articulating this. Now, I just did a Thursday, that was yesterday, I just did participated in one of these community conversation things that Rebel Wisdom did. I had done a commentary on Jonathan Rowson's take on sort of 3 years behind Peterson, thinking about, you know, how to sum up some things. And so I interacted with Jonathan a little bit on that. I don't know to what degree that the recording of that will be made public. It's available within Rebel Wisdom's, I'm not sure what word they use, club or something. But, you know, and David Fuller, who runs Rebel Wisdom, had said, well, often when you talk to high status people, they sort of get on a track. And once they get on a track, they sort of, you know, go through their points and move through their points. And so elements of that were in Peterson's speech. And that's certainly inevitable when you're being asked to speak on the same thing again and again. You sort of gauge your audience every time you talk about it, and you refine it. And one of the questions that was asked me towards the end of that was, do you think Peterson is, what's going to happen to Peterson in the second wave? Of course, I said, well, I don't know, but there are early indications that things are moving nicely. Some of the derailment that happened, I think, after, as through 2018 and into 2019, until June 2019, where basically his medical issues took him out for a while. You know, he's showing himself stronger and clearer, and I think able to articulate these things. And he is also, even though before this, we heard quite a bit about the rats, and y'all have, if you've listened to a lot of Peterson stuff, you've heard that before. But they've, you know, I thought, you know, this section here, he was quite clear and quite direct on this. And of course, it's interesting. I've heard Heather Hying talk about some of these issues a little bit, and she and Brett, we'll just play some more of this, because I thought this was really quite an interesting, it's an interesting pairing. And it was an interesting talk. I thought it was quite well done.
Well, I think there's some truth in that. I mean, one of the existential facts that compels us to ask religious questions is the fact of death. And that's why I also think you can't eradicate religion, for that matter, because what are you going to do? You're going to eradicate people's concern with death? I don't think so. You know, and I've been at funerals and people stand around and they don't know what to say to each other. Not really. Maybe they can give each other a hug. That's something, isn't it? But they don't know what to say, and that's because we're all speechless in the face of mortality. But that doesn't erase the question. And the question begs an answer. What's it all for? Well, we're trying to figure that out in our collective religious ideation, let's say. So, for example, when I look at Christianity, I think, well, at minimum, speaking as a psychologist, the figure of Christ is the consequence of a centuries-long, millennia-long discussion of what constitutes the ideal human being. Now, you might ask, is it any more than that? That would be a metaphysical question, but it's certainly at least that. And as that ideal, well, have you got a better solution to that problem? You know, you think about how it's expressed. That ideal is expressed in music, it's expressed in art, it's expressed in literature, it's expressed in architecture, it's expressed in dogma, and spiritual belief, and experience, and commitment, and faith, all of that. It's a very multidimensional conception. And, you know, you can dispense with it rationally, but, well, then what? You got something better? Well, no, you don't. You have something that looks like a set of arbitrary axiomatic assumptions that are enforced by fiat. And that's not a, like, part of Christianity, let's say, was an exploration of what the ideal was. There was at least that exploratory element. I mean, I know things degenerate into insistence, but it wasn't. You really think all of that was insistence by force? I don't think that's a plausible explanation in the least. I mean, Christ isn't the sort of character that a power-hungry maniac would dream up to exercise arbitrary control over a docile population. It's just, that just doesn't make sense. Right. I'm going to give our ancestors and us more credit than that. You know, we were at least trying to figure out how to be ideally in the face of our catastrophic morality. And that question, that's not going away.
Heather, I can't see your facial expressions at the moment, which is deeply frustrating to me, because I suspect I can't tell whether there's a lot of agreement or disagreement with you on this. Tell me, from an evolutionary biologist perspective, what is the function of religion? Do we need it to thrive as a species?
Well, I'm gonna punt the first part of that a bit, because it warrants its own dedicated conversation. Mm-hmm. But I agree very much with what Jordan was saying, and I think it actually indicates the problems with modernity in part are about a decohering. So I also agree with the problems with the new atheists. Atheist is a term that I have used to describe myself, but never new atheist, and that comes with the full understanding that religion has adaptive value, that if it did not, we wouldn't find every single culture in the history of humanity having had some form of religion. And what does it mean for us to be abandoning religion so quickly? Well, we can see part of it. You know, add this to the perfect storm of why it is that people are grasping for meaning. Because sure, any system that becomes orthodox, that becomes the representation of the sacred, will begin to become corrupt. Like this is the nature of systems, and they will need to be renewed, and there needs to be tension. Again, you know, again, one of the concepts that Brett and I explore in our forthcoming book, there needs to be tension between orthodoxy and heterodoxy, between the sacred and the shamanistic. Without this system that people are raised into, and they can say, I see that, I see the sacred there, I see the holy, and maybe I want to go to it, and maybe I want to turn away, people are just unable to even know where to find meaning. And so, you know, mind, body, and soul. I don't know, I don't have a brilliant grasp of what all is meant by soul, although much of it is in what Jordan is talking about, in the ineffable, in awe, in glory, what we feel when we experience a piece of music that just moves us viscerally. But even that, you know, that word that I just used at the end, that is a recognition that they all tie together. Visceral, its body, right? And so much of what we're experiencing now, the decohering of not just society, but I think of individuals, is people thinking, well, I don't need any of the stuff of the past. I don't even need to be tied to my own body. I can pretend that the thing that I am from the very beginning is simply a social assignment. No. Like this, all of this is who we are. Everything about our mind and our soul is embodied as well. And imagining otherwise is wrong. So, you know, I admitted that I was going to punt the question of exactly what religion is for evolutionarily up front. And I did. But what I did say clearly was, given that every culture ever known has had some form of religion, we know there is adaptive value in it. And there is yet to be a culture that is completely without religion that is succeeding widely. And, you know, there will be those, and Jordan is much better positioned to speak to this than I am, who knows more history than I am. There will be those who will argue, perhaps, you know, that China is an exception. But I think that some of what is passing for ideology, for instance, there is unto a new religion. You know, there something will fill the vacuum.
Christianity is growing faster in China than it did in Rome when it first emerged. So
there it is.
You know, that's an interest, and the suppression is probably helping it.
No doubt. Yeah.
It seems that there's an emergent issue. Heather, maybe you can tell me what you think about this, if you don't mind. So, you know, we have to organize ourselves in relationship to values, because we can't figure out what to pursue unless we rank order things, because we can't pursue everything at once. And so we have to rank order things in terms of their value and their approachability. So then imagine that, well, out of that, we can abstract something like value as such, right? Mm-hmm. And then you might say, well, there's an implicit understanding there that there are higher and lower values. And the whole value hierarchy is oriented around whatever value is. And you could say that the drive to God is the drive to understand the central factor that organizes all value. Or you could say it's representative of the thing that's at the top of a properly structured value hierarchy. And we all kind of have an intimation of that. I mean, everyone I ever met upbraids themselves for not being all they could be. Well, compared to what exactly? Well, something.
Compared to the ideal,
right?
That we hold.
What's that?
Compared to the ideal that we hold in our heads.
Yes, right? It's an odd ideal, because what it does is
not only hold in our heads, but hold in our heads together.
Whack you when you've deviated from it, and then your conscience tortures you. Now, conscience can go astray. You know, it can be too severe, and it can bring you down. So it's not an unerring guide, but it's an interesting phenomenon, because it sort of operates independently, and it's not subject to your will exactly, because, you know, wouldn't we all be able to just dispense with the dictates of conscience? It's no, you compare yourself to an implicit ideal and you torture yourself to the degree that you deviate. And you might rationalize and lie and deceive and try to ignore it and all of those things, but I've never seen that work. And so that's another example, I think, of something that's akin to, well, that's partly the function of religion from a social and biological perspective. It's like it orients you towards a collective ideal.
I think that's actually absolutely right. If I may tell an anecdote from my deep history.
This is a story that she and Brett has told before, and I treated it in another video, so I'm not going to treat it here. But I just thought that exchange was very clear, quite persuasive. It was very interesting to see Heather's participation in it, and I just, you know, had a few minutes today to get some of this down. So I thought, well, okay, I'll capture this in a video, and that way I'll be able to find it the next time that I'm looking for something coherent. And I wanted to just sort of, again, I mean, it's good to see Jordan, I think, getting clearer, more concise on these points that he's been making all along, but, you know, really nicely able to sort of put it on the table. Or is it me, just after 3 years listening to him as much of that as I have been able to see this more clearly? So let me know what you think in the comment section.